Well, Michael and I would like to welcome you back to another recording of the Saturn-Earth Connection. Our website is helloearth.info, and today is Tuesday, the 13th of February, 2018, and this is our 379 with Michael from Maui, Hawaii. Michael was taken to a huge luminescent sphere near Saturn as a student visitor, and return to Maui with our amazing flowing dialogue, and occasionally we hear from Shaharon, or Mike Humpty, using Michael to transmit his voice into the recording. And I want to thank James from North Wales, Pennsylvania, which is just a short distance from me, for sending us a check to Historicity Productions for $20, which covers our cost for the month, hosting all the hours and the hosting everything else. So thank you very much, James. All the listeners appreciate you, and so do I, because it's really nice. But anyway, here we go. Hello, Michael.
Hello, Curtis.
Hello. Well, welcome. Everything cool over there in Hawaii?
Yeah, it is cool.
Oh.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. So, yeah, it's warming up. Well, it's still cool.
Still cool.
Yeah.
Well, did you see that cool... You saw that cool launch of Elon Musk's of the Falcon Heavy last Tuesday, the last time we recorded. I didn't post it on the site right away. I guess I did it about an hour and a half later because I watched the launch and then got back to it. But for the people, the listeners who missed it, or anyway, there's a link on the homepage, there's a link on the listen page, and there's a link on part number 4 where Michael's hours are the 300 hours. Not the hours starting at 301. But Elon Musk sent up his Falcon Heavy. It was the largest launch vehicle ever in the world. He outdid Russia, NASA, had 27 engines. There were three first stages that came back, and two of them survived. The one didn't survive that landed on, supposed to land at sea on the drone. It was too far down range to come back, but there's cameras on board those things, those long candlesticks. They're like 14 stories high. And they come back and land on two round pads at the Kennedy Space Center. You can see Florida when it's coming back. It really is exciting. It's a little video for the people who haven't seen it or missed it, or the people who want to see it again. I saw it three times. It was great.
Yeah.
And I love seeing all that enthusiasm, and they never know when it's going to fail or if it's going to fail. And so that was a test. And he launched the payload was one of his roadsters, a bright red roadster, with a mannequin in the driver's seat and a spacesuit on. Did you see what was on the dash, Michael?
No, I couldn't see. It's supposed to have been a version of his Roadster by Hot Wheels.
Yes, but on the screen, like there was a screen, it said, "Don't panic."
Oh, I didn't see that, no.
So that was pretty neat, but it was... Because I used to watch all those launches. I remember May the 5th, 1961, Friendship 7 just went into space and came back down. And those days, they're not captain of the ship. They're just on board. Have nothing to say. It was real exciting, and Elon Musk is doing great. He also makes electric cars. And he's also boring under Los Angeles to minimize the traffic. So he's doing that, and he's doing the Hyperloop. And so he's real busy. But that heavy launch was great. So I just think everybody listening should see that. It was spectacular. So can I say anything more about it, Michael?
Well, one of the things that is, I mean, as far as rocketry, the retro landing, you know, it can come right back and land pretty much where it started from, I guess, a special landing, which mm-hmm. is Earth, which was, you know, one of the easy goals to try to, you know, focus on after having our computer systems as fast and as sophisticated as they are right now. At the moon, during the moons, you know, during that space age, during that time of Apollo missions and things like that, the computer couldn't even operate 1/10 of our smartphones or 1/100th of our smartphones. That's so now it's just, you know, would be pretty simple. In other words, for it to run the software required. You were just talking about how your computer is old and you want it to run the old software and the new software, and it somehow doesn't want to do both. And that's, you know, part of the curve that is required when you make a leap in technology, and that you have to sort of leave some things behind, because what you have developed that is new cannot work with what is old. And if you were to make it work with what is old, then you literally have to make an old computer inside the new computer. This is one of the obstacles that had to be overcome by some of the developers or designers, engineers, in trying to overcome that request. So the accountants and, you know, those that really count the numbers, who said your break even would be, instead of so many million units, would be something like a billion units to make it, you know, at this price point. And of course they would go, let's not even think of that. And of course, that's a matter of how things progress forward. So we got to leave things behind sometimes. But going on a forward-going basis, the payoffs are extreme. And I think when it comes down to what we are about to enter into, you know, as far as technology and transport and communications and telecom age. Now you mentioned Elon Musk idea, boring under where?
Los,
LA or?
Yeah, Los Angeles.
You can.
In that area.
Whatever, yeah.
Off on airport.
What they're going to try to do is go. They actually have theorized breaking the sound barrier in that type of closed vacuum type atmosphere, where it's this levitated train will actually, you know, be floating on maglev, but actually will be able to break the sound barrier, because it would make this tube essentially a vacuum. So it has nothing to really, you know, burrow through, like atmosphere. And that's an extreme end of the goal, but I don't think they'll make it a true vacuum. But it will definitely allow it to go very fast, mm-hmm. much faster than any train ever. Mm-hmm. The record trains that are, you know, on surface are very fast. I was looking at some in Europe that was developed for transportation in Europe. And they're like, oh my goodness, they're like, wow. Way above even the racing cars. But now, with Elon Musk's moving into a totally different direction, which is hyper, and it's hyper because it goes beyond normal constraints. Mm-hmm. Instead of thinking within the box, which is a train runs on tracks and it's above the ground, and that's how trains work, he thinks outside the box and says, uh-uh, it's not even going to have to go through the atmosphere. And I said, how is that? Well, the Hyperloop is in a vacuum. Creates the vacuum. Oh. Wow.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah. That gets that's really thinking outside of the box. Mm-hmm. And that's really where it comes down to. We'll never... You know, one of the things that biblically we were given an idea of how far away our thinking is. It says, eye hath not seen, nor ear heard, nor entered into the heart of man the things which God has prepared for those who love him. Now, in terms of just seeing unbelievable technologies that are beyond even our measly 2,000-year future, 4,000 or 5,000 years. Imagine looking at technologies that have moved millions of years ahead. Time is no longer a constraint. Everything is outside of the box and far outside of the box. So when you think in terms of that and the fact that life, repeat it again, life is a technology. It's not an accident. It's a technology. One of the interesting things I remember my mom telling me is, who are the angels? And I must have been about, maybe 8 or 9, you know, kid. Oh, they're like heavenly helpers. You know, I said, oh, are they people? And he says, yeah. And do they have a mother and father? Oh, no. They're already there. They were never born. And that's one of the interesting things about the angelic core, those that are populating the heavens for a very, very long time. And they are totally outside of our ability to imagine in terms of relating it to our present environment. Think of how Elon Musk said, he looked at the jet planes flying up in the sky and said, imagine if there was no air, it'll be like outer space. How fast could we go? Well, let's make outer space here on Earth. Now that's an interesting concept, actually doing that. That is far beyond him trying to make a rocket, because that was just something that already was done. He's just repeating and actually making it better than it ever was. Now, think of the level in which you take a technology that is beyond our imagination and try to imagine it. Well, at least for me, I was introduced to perhaps one of the lowest levels of technologies that I could experience within the dimensional realm in which I live in, the same one you live in. And it was a great introduction, but there's a lot more. I remember going to visit the Adirondack Most High. He was very important. If anyone could be equated to God, it would be a Adirondack Most High Observer, because he's the only one that can really interact in the affairs of the humans, their politics or their destiny, And it said, of course, in biblically, that they can give kingdom to whoever they please and things like that. And it's verified in terms of the Rinchen book, but in speaking or just in terms of traveling to visit him, I believe it was one in which I was taken in a containment of light, which was perhaps one of the areas which I could, you might say, experience. But it took me dimensionally into their domain, the secret place of the Most High. And I was able to ask the question that I had been bothering. God is mighty and great, and why did he make us, and then make us so imperfect? Well, that's not the point. The point was far beyond that. And I got the answer from the Rhonda deck, which was to become as he. Now, if all the angels of heaven are limited in number, they are not able to procreate, we can. And out of our pool of great numbers of humans, billions on earth, and probably with a much higher success rate than ever before, the populace of heaven shall be incorporated with numerous mortal beings of mortal origin, and many of which have maybe gone through the first level of change, which is the Marantia change, which is really simply adding to our reality level. See, the Marantia level is one in which another 100 elements are added to our, you know, our periodic table. It's outside the periodic table that we know about, yet linked directly and can be connected directly with it. Having experienced Marantia plants or Marantia living creatures, they're very similar. You can look at them, you can interact with them, you can even breathe some of the Marantia atmosphere. And it's a wonderful thing that you can bring back the Marantias. If you ever went to the New Jerusalem orbiting Saturn, you'd come back with a fragrance, much like perfume, very sweet and nice. And you'd also come back with some of the energy, which has a luminescence about it, and you would have that halo, so famously put in the artistry of the Renaissance painters. And that art wasn't done out of some crazy imagination. It was done because it was an actual observed phenomena that was seen about these people that became known as saints. The saints had a higher relationship to the divine nature. And that nature we are supposed to participate in, grow into, and make stages toward it. And I was an experiencer of that, and a continual experiencer of that. If you can have that desire to know God, to know his nature, he will take every opportunity that you can avail, give, to make that participation, growth of the divinity that's within you already to a point in which becomes more and more real. They begin to participate in many, many natures that are beyond our realm. The actual Marantia exchange of physicality will not happen until there is a fusion between yourself in the divine nature. But the participation, the rubbing shoulders with, is very real. And that attains your citizenship in a more mature level to the divine world, the world of the divine individuals, divine people. So that is where the concept that was taught of the Olden Ones, that we are the children of God, the offspring, and that offspring has great dimensional destinies far beyond our understanding. But the reason I'm talking in this manner is just for us to understand that within the realm in which we live, just simply thinking outside of the box and letting our imagination dictate our destiny, which is seated by the divine nature, what we can actually begin to accomplish. And that is a phenomenal thing. And just thinking about this contained vehicle was like traveling with the Dano in his embrace, surrounded by light. Through, I asked him, I said, is this an elevator or something? And he looked, well, he just replied and he said, in a way. Oh, okay. And it took a little while. It was like riding an elevator. It took a few seconds and then we were there. And getting there was special. I believe it was not offered to everybody. And I was favored enough. He said I was perfect. And when I was declared perfect, then he took me. The term perfect is in God's picture of perfect. It says, be ye perfect as God is perfect. Now, at least to an extent, that perfection was judged for me enough so that I could take that journey to bring back and to share. So by the Dano's judgment of perfection, I was declared perfect enough, or just as he said, you're perfect. Walk before me now, be ye perfect. Well, that's pretty much what I did. I just was walking in front of him. Then I went for this fantastic ride into the domain of the Most High Observers. So anyway, Elon Musk and his out of this world adventures, yeah, and we participate in them, maybe vicariously, by simply watching it on the side. In terms of participating in the divine nature, why we do, it is not on the side. It is much, and it should be much, more like a hand-in-hand relationship. So, in other words, if you were like with the level it would be for working with Elon Musk would be face-to-face, hand-to-hand, technology-to-technology, or in one way participating in it. So part of, you might say, the whole program. And that's pretty much the message in which right now what I believe is trying to come through. Get with the program. It's only a lifetime that you have to make as much of your ascent journey complete as possible so that you can really leap through the many levels of the divine ascension process and be rewarded, greatly rewarded. It doesn't mean that you won't eventually make it, but it does take you quickly through many of the ascent journeys. Okay. Get the idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this, so it was more than an elevator.
Well, that's as far as I could take it, you know, in terms of trying to relate it to something. You know, but it's like, wow, what an elevator. So when I see some of these Peruvian, you know, in Peru, they have this thing that's cut in, looks like a door into a rock, a wall of rock. And I said, reminds me when I experienced some of the transdimensional experiences that I had with my thought adjuster, first meeting him. That doorway was into my, believe it or not, my ice box, my refrigerator when I was little. Walked right into it. But I can say that could very well have been, that could have been used, much like the gateway that I went through. And it was a physical journey. It actually went through it. And I remember in the presence of the veranda deck. And I was looking at myself, looking at my hands, and looking at him. And he was had his arms outstretched because he took human form, beautiful, beautiful human form, and outstretched his arms to become as I am, was the answer to what is the purpose of life. And I then looked down at my arms and hands, and they were the same. Things changed a long way from being that. So I actually been there in physical form.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And does lend credence to the term that these beings actually live or domiciled in physical locations. Yeah. So architectural worlds are actually some of their dwelling places.
It's their big ship.
Yeah, and how is it made? Well, it actually grows. They grow it like we grow chips, perhaps. You know how we grow chips. And what I mean by chips is computer chip. We call them the silicon chip that we grow. It's gotten so sophisticated. It's unbelievably sophisticated.
You mean the chip has grown?
It's grown, yeah. The containment. It's not complete when you dope it. It actually has to grow into that form. You know. Initially the silicon doping was, you know, was at the scale of making a junction, what is called a PN junction, positive negative junction. But it grew so small and tiny that now they're thinking about it being one molecule wide instead of, you know, kind of massive as what is found in our transistors right now.
A molecule wide? Are these chips, are you saying that we're building chips that small?
Yeah. We're on the edge of that, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Nanotechnology?
Yeah. Yes, nanotechnology. And we're using the spin of a neutron. Is that a neutron? The spin, anyway, they found that they all have a spin to it, all matter. But that spin can be given a information and intelligence laid upon it to be able to do basically two states, but it's really three states, you know, So that's on off, and I don't know. Yeah, so that goes into quantum computing today, which is very, very high level of thinking, perhaps, if you were to give computers the ability to think. Much of that has to do with neurons, neural networking. Sometimes it's gone beyond that already. Just neural networks are pretty much trying to copy our own brain.
Trying to copy our own brain.
Yeah, that's pretty much where we got all our technology.
Mm-hmm.
We back engineer life, you know. So, and as I said, life is a technology, high technology, but nevertheless, it is a technology. It's given a finite destiny to accomplish a greater task, and that seemed elusive to me. I'd say, what is the purpose of life? Then to get the answer from a Most High Observer, which is the closest thing to God within our domain right now, except if we were to actually interview Jesus Christ. But in terms of another being who is assigned jurisdiction within our solar system, because of the fact that our solar system, our planet, was very important in the destiny of the entire universe, because that's where Jesus Christ became a human being. Very important in the absolute completion of the universe. It's also our planet, Irancha, is an important part of the archangel governances. So if you were to wonder about archangels, these are, high destiny beings. And they operate in the affairs of men in concern with their objective task, whatever it may be, that it comes out of the governance for the entire system of Satania. So right now the biggest problem there is on Earth. They got a lot of rebels running around. That is why if you are on the side of Jesus Christ, you are His, and you are growing as a child, you might say, fulfilling His nature. It was said that Jesus Christ was the firstborn among many brethren. That means truly that He set a pathway for the new divine ascension process, not the one that was in place. This new one had to be laid out in the midst of the rebellion, because it had to equip us not to become deceived by the propagators of lies.
Propagators of lies. Yeah, there's a lot of them. I was just talking about the news media and how fantastic that Falcon Heavy launch was, and Elon Musk is, and they don't give him much credit, if any credit. He could have gone. Yeah. He could have moved to another country from South Africa. His mother was in Canada. And he could have just stayed in Canada, but no, he wanted to do this in America. And it's a good thing he did.
Yeah. At least we had the coverage for him. You know, be very interesting. You know, man, have some coverage of that real experience. I want to see the, you know, the real effect of moving the that what was it called? That underground.
The Boring Company.
No, yeah, the Boring Company. But what was it making?
Oh, the Hyperloop.
Oh, yeah, Hyperloop. Yeah, forgot what it was called.
Yeah. That's different than the Boring Company.
Yeah, that sounds so boring.
Well, that's what he, that's him.
Yeah.
But Michael, you said our planet was very important.
Yeah,
very important compared to what planet? Or, I mean, very important compared to what?
Every other planet that is within our system right now.
Oh, yeah, within our system.
Our system of, well, moving on 700 planets. Mm-hmm. And also, within the entire universe, under the rule or the established governance of Nebadon, it's an entire universe. So it's that important because the important people are here, you know.
Important people are here.
Yeah.
Like Jesus is here.
Well, actually, it's all over the place. But he has come here, in, you might say, incognito. But not, you know, not. He never really was that big deal of announcing things. But the others, which are the, you know, like the Most High observers, archangels. One of the archangels is Michael. The other archangel is Gabriel. These are the ones that are mentioned in the Bible. But there are many archangels. These are high destiny beings, you know.
Hmm.
You can read a lot about that, of course, as much as you can. From the Urantia book. The Urantia book, I cannot say enough about how credible it is. I saw so many things over and over again mentioned that were introduced to me directly. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there they are, written down.
From a long time, well, not a long time ago, but 60-some years ago, 1955.
Yeah. Yeah. They were in the 30s. They were published much later, but...
Oh.
1930-something.
Published in 55.
Yeah, one of the published.
The 50s.
Yeah, they had several different ways of doing it. But finally, when they get... Anyway, that's... The Urantia book, as far as, you know, giving it less power by saying that it was, you know, authored in there. But actually, to me, it was giving away so much real information. Stuff that I can confirm actually is absolutely real and true, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Gives away so much information.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not a... I have people come to me within a short period of time, great readers, they love to read, finish the Urantia book, and they're all going over it the second time now. And that was only in 2 months, or 3 months, I think 3 months. And now they're like, they thank me for so much the first time. And now they're like just always happy. Because it's not a tale, it's not a fantasy, it's a great reference book.
Mm-hmm.
The Holy Bible is more like a romance.
Mm-hmm.
novel of God's embrace of humanity in its various forms, written by the head of the prophets, and maybe they wrote some changes in there, but ultimately, for the purest sense, love God with all your heart, mind, soul, and body, and your neighbor as yourself. You fulfill the Bible. Mm-hmm. Anyway, some people would like to leave God out of the picture with extraterrestrials, mm-hmm. but that is the picture. And if you leave God out of the picture, the one that authors that concept is named Lucifer, the devil, Satan, his cohorts, and the rest.
Mm-hmm. Well, where did everything come from? All the animals, all the plants.
They come
from the Big Bang theory.
What are the things that you got to give? Lucifer some credit for creating wild animals and the concept of evolution, mm-hmm. because he really liked to play around with life and experiment with it. And when it came down to reinventing the destiny of the human race, which had a purpose, which I of course always talk about, which is to become a high order eternal being, like Vrondadek, Most High, he tried to intercept that, but in the meantime, before that even came about, he was tinkering with life as a technology, and was responsible for making sure he could wipe it out during various times, basically erase it and start all over again. But at the time of the human race, it hasn't happened. That great erasure of life on the planet hasn't happened, because it's out of his hands now. He used to bring it on a regular basis, because he was not a short-lived being, essentially was an eternal being. And when he played around with that. But life here has many of the many analogies, analogous to life in perhaps, Edentia, another domain within our higher constellations, which is made up of many systems. But there, the animals, you could probably, when it's written about, they'll see the wildness out of all the animals. Not there. It's talking about the Edentia area, where the life experiment has gone. There's no life experimentation. It's just perfect life. They're all tame. They're not bloodthirsty. You don't have to fear them. There's not disease of which has been introduced here. And in many areas of other planets and worlds that were part of his, you might say, evolutionary process. So he was probably an evolutionist versus a creationist. He didn't fulfill some of the characteristics of carrying life for the purpose of creating a higher destiny planetary world for the purpose of you might say populating the universe with sentient beings. That was not what he wanted. And that's probably the reason he was deposed. He has the various problems that came out of it have not been completely solved, and he has not been declared completely deposed of. The Ancients of Days would be the one to declare that, which come out, they're older and above the universe of Nebanon, so they actually are outside the authority of Christ Jesus, the universe creator.
So your friends who are reading the Urantia book, what are they saying about the information they're reading that they've never seen before?
I'm saying it's wonderful.
Wonderful.
Yeah. It's wonderful. It's one of the words they use. Because it confirms so many of their, what they felt was, what was truly right. You know, in spite of what they may have learned in church. Often that comes down to that, what they learned about in church. Mm-hmm. You know, and they may not have agreed with it. I think one of the things was the fear of hell. That destiny was made clear, that hell was not meant for the human race. It was meant to imprison Lucifer and his cohorts. And the prison planets exist. And if you want to call it hell, then you can. But it's not meant for the human race. Although there are those that have visited it and have to have, you know, been thoroughly readjusted.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're thoroughly readjusted.
Yeah, yeah.
So their reality has been readjusted.
Yeah, their attitude adjustment.
Attitude adjustment.
It wasn't just them. I had to go through an attitude adjustment. That was not the most pleasant experience. It hurt deeply, but I was told, you need an attitude adjustment, and it came. If I didn't change my attitude, which basically was, you know, feeling like what I was teaching was, because it wasn't accepted by other ministries and churches and religions, that they were outside of, and they were, but they should, my attitude should never have been to eliminate them from, you might say, my respect, my love, and that brotherhood that should have remained in spite of differences in attitude. We are made of the same stuff with the same higher promise and destiny. And if people cut me down and did a lot of negative, I shouldn't feel, you know, that just because they don't understand.
Mm-hmm.
Need to just, so a lot of times what we are basically have to just love them from, you might say, don't jump into the lion's cage. We can love the lion from a distance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, love that animal. Yeah. And many do. You know, we're given, you know, looking at the tigers of Bengal tiger, the famous Bengal tiger, having a hard time being hunted down by human beings because they make trouble, yeah, kill people. And you know, how, you know, if you take a good look at them, you can really kind of love them a bit as a lovable creature, but wild animal, but from a distance, from a zone of safety. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A zone of safety.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't have to create a zone of negative or a zone of hatred, I'd say. That's where the attitude adjustment has to come in.
Well, the zone of safety with a lion is either he's in a cage or you're in a cage.
Or I'm just looking at him through a TV screen.
Or a telescope.
Yeah. But that's the story that also is one in which is that they have in heaven, you might say, in let's say Edentia, a group of architectural spheres have this perfect world of animals that are not wild, many of which are very much like what we understand as a different forms of animals, but much more lovable. So having, you know, what would be a wild animal here would be over there would be like another friendly animal.
But as far as keeping Lucifer at a safe distance, seems like that's, Lucifer is here, woven in this planet. How do we get rid of him, or how do we protect ourselves, like putting him in a cage?
He essentially is in a cage,
mm-hmm.
And the products of his philosophy are still functional, because you don't put a philosophy in a cage. Lucifer is often visited and people would just look at him and is this a man that, or this creature, is he the you know, is he that being that caused the whole universe to, you know, be shaken up, and this entire system of Satania to be, you know, rattled about. So there are people who complete their ascent career by actually visiting the author of ultimate evil.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Or he's visiting us.
No.
No.
He's not. Many of the things that are really bad, seemingly really bad, many of Hitler's own terrible things, they're of his invention, not Lucifer's.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where I have to come in and essentially, you know, part of the revelation, part of the school, you might say, realization that can't blame it on the devil. It's part, a lot of times, it is the human wildness, the animal nature untamed within us. It has to be brought under correction, or the great attitude adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
The great attitude adjustment.
Yeah, that's one that is going to make a lot of difference. When Stephen was being stoned, and the author basically of modern Christianity that we know was there holding the coats of those who were picking up stones and throwing them at killing this guy, Stephen, he turned around and basically was able to say in his last words, "Father, forgive them. They have no idea. They don't know." So they were operating under the old regime, and that regime was him being stoned to death. Once purely given revelation, that revelation has got great power even over our mortal lives, because we will be able to know intrinsically the truth, and it really will be a tool freeing us from the bondage that has been laid by many errors in our interpretation of truth or other things such as that. Mm-hmm. Practices of religion. And that person came coming to me saying that, "Oh, I'm so glad that you, because it only confirms what I already believed, you know." And that is the thought adjuster in her life, who is quite remarkable to have read that whole Irancha book in such a short time. She said, "I love to read." Oh, if you love to read, well, you can complete that Irancha book in no time.
That is a big book. It certainly is. It's got, I like how you said there's much information. Gives away much information.
Mm-hmm.
That you saw.
Yeah, it's all quality and true.
Mm-hmm.
Not a invented story.
No story here.
Yeah. It's just a documentation of what really is. And to the level which it was permitted, I can say absolutely it is. Yeah.
To the level it was permitted?
For me to experience.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Yeah, and that would be what it was permitted. Just visiting the Veranda Deck Most High is not ordinary.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then to have a manual. Okay, we had a little glitch. It just stopped. Michael said he heard a click, and then I was talking about the going out to Saturn and being able to see that object with that Voyager 1 and Voyager 2, and I was talking about the Cassini going out there and knowing exactly where to look, that if you had a suitcase, you could hide it in Manhattan, New York City, never find it, but if you knew the address, you'd know just where to go. And it seemed that Cassini spacecraft knew just where to go. 2006, it just found that object, that architectural world, really fast. So, Michael, I don't know what happened, but it just went click and it stopped. But are you back on?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you're there. Okay, well, I don't know. I wasn't looking at that screen. So we lost a little bit of ground, but it was just me talking about the Cassini spacecraft knowing where to look. Because Saturn's pretty big. It's almost 10 times the size of Earth. And they didn't just come across it. Oh, look, what's that? And it had to be built for a reason. What was the main reason? What was the big thing, because they, let's go look at the other satellites around Saturn. And so it was I wonder what the real reason was to build that, and who funded, who paid for that.
Mm-hmm.
Projects like that, they're talked about for years before they even get started. So, took a long time. But I'm glad we have those photographs. And we have photographs from Earth. Have the Urantia book. And all of your hours, or all your time on here. This has just been amazing. But what really blows me away is when you said, what is the purpose of life? And that really has floored me. And I just lost a partner, Dr. George Freebot. Dr. George A. Freebot IV. He died. I just went out to Washington. Remember, I wasn't recording in November. One week there. Maybe it was 2 weeks there. And I went out to meet George and his wife and learn about HomeZone more. And trying to start a project with a partner of his that he had back in the 80s, a Tesla project. So now that's all. Have to pick up the pieces. But I did want to mention George Freebot's name on this recording. And I put HomeZone on the website. It's oxygen and magnesium. It's ozone and magnesium. And it's wonderful. And I, anyway, now hopefully we can keep having that made. It was made back in 1894. Go to the history of ozone and you can. Okay, I had to start this again. Somehow it broke loose again and I wasn't watching to see when it stopped, but Michael's back on the line and I restarted my computer before I start recording every time to make sure I'm starting fresh and we don't have any problems that we don't want. But sorry, Michael, about that.
It's all right. It's a technical difficulty.
Oh, is that what it's? That's the official word?
No, I don't know. It's the old television lingo.
Yeah.
Technical difficulties.
Technical difficulty. Well,
and now we have something called issues.
Yeah, issues.
Various issues.
Yeah, well, I guess I shouldn't take my eyes off of this thing, but I look at my other screen and all of a sudden I look back and it's just a flat line. It's like, what happened? And then you're not there. You're no longer on the Michael had to call back. Okay, well, maybe this is a way of saying we're done today.
Okay.
So we'll say aloha and we'll connect next Tuesday.
That'll be fine.
Is that good? Okay.
Aloha.
Aloha, Michael.